Hi, I'm Mike Sainsbury, and welcome to this ASI cast. One of the most frustrating problems consumers have when presented with almost infinite choice of what they might view or listen to is how to find the content they want. The challenge of discovery is being driven by leaps in technology, especially voice-based technology based on machine learning, which is leading the development of a conversational interface. Charles Dawes, International Marketing Chief at TiVo, discusses with our Media Technologies Director, Graham Lovelace, how this interface works, how it will continue to evolve, and some of the wider implications of this further development.
Voice-based interactions are a hot topic right now thanks to the introduction and rapid take-up of smart speakers such as Amazon Echo and Google Home. Voice assistants have long been integrated in smartphones. I'm increasingly creating notes and text messages using the speech-to-text feature on my iPhone, for instance. Voice interaction is now being integrated with connected TVs and connected set-top boxes, allowing viewers to search for programs by talking to or even shouting at their tellies. Those voice commands are becoming more conversational, leading to the development of a conversational interface. To explain what that means and understand the challenges and opportunities for media owners and platform operators, I'm joined by Charles Dawes, International Marketing Chief at TiVo. Charles, welcome to this ASI cast.
Thank you, Graham. It's great to be with you.
Let's jump straight in if we can. What is a conversational interface?
Well, a conversational interface really is what it says in the title. It's an interface that allows you to have a conversation with the search and discovery experience that you're having. So very much around the ability for the interface to be able to give you feedback that's relevant as you go through the discovery experience. So thinking about things of understanding the context of what you're saying and being able to give you a smart response back so that you can follow up and have a conversation with the system, similar to how you would have a conversation with your partner or significant other sat on the couch with you on a Saturday evening.
So you wouldn't need to be that specific. You could just say something like, show me something that's funny.
Yes, I mean, I think if you think in the traditional sense, when you sit down to discover content, be it music or video, actually you're not necessarily always thinking about a particular title that you want to watch or the channel that you want to watch. Quite often you'll sit down and, like you say, oh, I really just want to watch something funny. So being able to express that and the system to be able to know what you mean by funny and to be able to understand that funny can mean different things to different people in different countries and to be able to come back with a set of results. And then if you'd be able to say, oh, actually, just the ones with Tom Hanks and be able to then be able to take that down to the next level and be able to understand that actually what you're now looking for is something that's funny, that's on now, that has Tom Hanks.
So that in a way that compares then with a more traditional menu-driven system, you would go down more of a fixed series of pathways, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you think about a traditional menu-based system, you'll see, and if you think of a traditional TV guide, you'll get a menu, you'll get a list of options, you'll go into an option, you'll then get another menu with another list of options. You'll then go down into that, and then eventually you might get to some content. With a voice-based and a conversational-based system, actually you can skip many of those levels because you're not having to go through saying, show me a TV program, show me a TV program that is a comedy, show me a TV program that is a comedy that features a particular comedian.
We'll come back to the experience shortly, but before we do, what's making all of this possible? What is the underlying technology here?
So I think everything that's making this possible now is actually those leaps in technology that we've seen and the introduction of voice-based technology, so having the ability for us to be able to understand what people say and to be able to move in the voice space away from a very command and controlled based interaction. If you think about some of the early implementations of where we've seen voice, What we've seen is it's very much being used around kind of that having to say particular keywords, having to say things in a particular order. And what we're seeing now, and certainly what we're doing with the technology that we work with, is and why we call it the conversational, is because you don't have to say the same thing in the same order every single time. And that the ability and the natural language understanding technologies out there that leverages on all of the artificial intelligence and machine learning allows us to move to that kind of next step. And the other thing that underlies this that actually is really important and really crucial, particularly in the voice discovery space, is having a real in-depth understanding of content. So if you think about a traditional guide experience and the information about the content, you'll see on screen a title of the content, you'll see a synopsis of the content, you'll potentially see a list of the actors who star in the content. But to be able to have a conversational experience, you actually need to understand a lot more about the content. Yeah. So one of the things that we've seen over recent years is the move to storing that information, that metadata about content in graph-based systems, where you move each individual piece of information becomes an entity. So an entity could be the title of a film, it could be a particular cast member, it could be a location where the film is filmed or a location where the film is set. It could be a product that's part of a product placement within a film. And each of those different entities has a relationship with all the other entities. And those different relationships also are constantly changing almost in real time as to how the level of importance to each of the other pieces of information is, but also the level of importance to actually what's going on outside of the discovery system. So what's going on in the real world, as it were, because that really can affect how people are searching for content, what's top of mind for them, and so having that move from what we term static metadata into dynamic metadata really enables us to be able to start to introduce these types of conversational interfaces.
And how are you achieving that much deeper, richer metadata? Is that machines or is that more human driven?
So actually for us, it's a mix between the two. So we've always prided ourselves on having this mix of what we call man and machine. So there's certain tasks that the machine is very good at, and obviously we've got all the machine learning and the algorithms go out, and we look across many hundreds of thousands of resources across the web that are content that entertainment related, and we're constantly monitoring those, looking to understand what's being written. So also actually using the same kind of technology that we use to understand what you've said, to actually understand what's being written on a blog post or what's being written in a critical review.
Oh, I see.
And be able to make those links and search out and tease out where content's related to each other. And also be able to go down and get some of the more technical information about content. But at the same time, we use people to actually write about content. So write those synopsis, listen to a piece of music and be able to understand how that music makes somebody feel. Because despite all of the advances of technology, I don't personally think we're still not at that stage where we can really have a machine really feel emotions yet.
Yeah.
And certainly content, and be it music or video, is all about that emotional connection.
Yes.
And so we still have a team of editors who are still going through, listening to music tracks, watching pieces of content, really giving that human touch to the data as well, which is just as important as the actual the machine side and understanding all of those links.
So thinking about TV discovery, do viewers actually want voice search?
Yes, absolutely. And certainly when we look at the research that we've been doing and we look across other sources of research, we're seeing that actually we've kind of passed that cusp of people wanting to have voice as one of the methods of interaction. In our own research, we've seen around about 61% of people say they'd use voice search if it was offered by their service provider. And when we look wider, actually, we've seen research coming out of groups like ComScore where they're predicting that by 2020, actually 50% of all search will be voice driven. So I think it's something that people are really demanding. It's one of those things that actually you see as people discover it and they discover the ease of it, more and more they want to have it there and be able to use it.
Is there a particular demographic that's more inclined to use voice? I'm assuming it's just younger people using smartphones.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's one of those areas where that would be your kind of expectation. And certainly a lot of the research focuses around the younger demographics using it. And of course, people who are growing up with it, it's just more, that's just what you do. It's a way that you interact. And one of the things that we found actually anecdotally is that actually older generations are also embracing it because of the simplicity side. Yep. One of the things that you think about, if you think about particularly in the content discovery space and the program guide space, a lot of older people are maybe haven't grown up with technology in the same way, are still kind of a little bit nervous about using it. The other thing we have to take into account is actually as we get older, things like our eyesight start to fail. And so being able to read what's on a screen isn't necessarily as easy as it used to be. And certainly being able to getting into quite a complicated user interface can be really quite difficult for people. And so one of the things that we're seeing actually is that really once the older generation actually know it's there, and that's obviously one of the challenges is actually helping people to understand that they have access to a voice-based system. But to be able to sit down and just pick up the remote control and be able to press a button and just say the title of the program that you want to watch, or be able to say that you'd like to watch something funny, really does open up the discovery experience for people again in a way that I don't think we've seen for a long time.
Yeah. You've long been involved, Charles, in EPG development. In your view, will voice totally replace the on-screen guide? Are we really heading for a zero UI, as some people are saying, or will the traditional EPG grid still be around?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, I've been doing stuff in the EPG space for longer than I care to remember, from when we first launched digital TV with cable and wireless in the late 90s. Actually, for me, what voice is doing is voice is really enabling a new way to interact with the system. But I think that actually it's not going to totally replace certainly in the guide space, and certainly in the space where you have a screen already. I think to totally remove the feedback from the screen for me personally isn't the way forward. Clearly, we've got devices where we don't have screens, where actually voice and audio becomes the feedback model. But I think where we have a screen, I think we'll still continue to take advantage of that for being able to display a set of results. Also, you can display a lot more information and somebody can take that information in and process it a lot quicker than actually having to listen to something coming, a list of items coming back to them. So there's a lot around what's the most appropriate. The other thing that's really interesting is recently we've seen the launch of lots of kind of what's termed in the US market the skinny bundle of services being delivered OTT, having newer kind of interaction models. And one of the things that's gone with that is people have missed out having a traditional grid guide. And what's really interesting actually is on the Sling TV product, actually that's one of the things that recently they've actually put back in. Because when they looked at it, It was their most requested feature that was kind of missing from the service. So I think, and that's there because while it's not necessarily the most beautiful interface, actually it's a really great interface for being able to show a lot of information quickly and for people yes. to be able to just scan across it, see what they want, and be able to then make their choice.
Yes. Will voice open up new monetization opportunities for operators? I could imagine certain words that people, as they're saying them, could say trigger ads or even surface suggested recommendations higher if certain organizations are paying those offering voice interaction. Is that the case? Are we starting to see that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that voice does do is actually opens up the number of kind of keywords and the amount of information that we have about how people search, because when you're speaking, first of all, actually what we find is it really changes the paradigm, because actually whatever query you do with voice, the implicit underlying factor is actually you're talking about yourself. So when you say, what's on TV tonight? Yep. You're asking, what's on TV tonight for me? You're not just asking a general question of what's on TV tonight and I want a general list of what's on TV tonight. Actually, I really want to know what's on TV tonight and what's most appropriate for me.
Yes.
So you start to really move into really driving a more personalized experience. And so that's one factor. And then the other factor is actually people start to really ask those questions the same way as you would if you were sat there talking to somebody else in the room. So you don't necessarily remember the title of a program, but you can remember certain factors about it. So, for instance, you can remember there was a film with Tom Hanks, and you can remember that there was a volleyball, and that volleyball was Wilson, and it was the became the character that he talked to in Castaway.
Yep.
So that starts to really open up other avenues to be able to follow, because clearly there Wilson is a brand as well.
Yes. Yep. So the key question here, as you mentioned, about when you're asking what's on TV tonight, it's the individual. So that implies this is an individual level. Yet most TV viewing research suggests is social. You're watching with other people in the room. And so is there the potential then that these systems would even understand individuals speaking to the machine, the discovery engine, and it's having a conversation with two or three people in front of the TV?
Yeah, and I think it's a really interesting one, because we've in the kind of content discovery space, we've often had this conundrum of how do you get to true personalization on an individual basis versus the kind of group personalization, and people have been very resistant to having any kind of form of logging in and that kind of thing, because it really is can be very disruptive to the experience. Plus, you have to take account of the kind of group scenario. And I think what we see is we see kind of two levels. So one is you will still also obviously have that group scenario, and you can go through a process of using various technologies to understand who's within the group. Yep. And also you can do a lot around kind of the time of day of week, understanding that you need different types of content recommendation and different types of what we call content prediction, actually, of finding actually what is that best piece of content for that device right now.
Yes.
You can do a lot based around kind of like the device type. So if you're speaking into your mobile, that's clearly going to be a lot more of a personal experience is demanded than if you're speaking into a remote that's for a TV.
Yes.
Although actually understanding that different voices are used can help you start to move into what level of personalization do I need for this in this individual scenario right now?
Yes. That's fascinating. Could voice create additional audience metrics? So data around what's being requested right now or over a period?
I think it can help with that. I think actually what we see is with the implementation actually of more and more search and recommendation systems, actually we're getting a lot of that kind of information around what's being watched now, understanding what's trending. Actually, it's also really useful to be able to have the kind of systems that we have with, for instance, the knowledge graph, actually be able to understand what's trending, not just inside the service provider system, but actually be able to link that into what's going on in social, what's being looked at across various different search engines, things like Google Trends and that kind of piece of information.
Yes.
To be able to create that more holistic view of content and understanding, having a better understanding of what content's important right now. But I do think it also starts to help you understand some of the pieces, like the classic example is that one of show me something funny, because funny if you think about how the TV industry categorizes content, funny is not something that's used to categorize content within the kind of technical specifications of how you categorize content. Plus, funny means something different to different individuals, but it also is different culturally between different countries.
Yeah.
So what we find funny in the UK is very different to what's found funny in the US, is very different to what's found funny in Asia, is very different to what's found funny in the rest of Europe. So it actually helps us as an industry to actually understand much more around the categorization of content as well. And of course, as you show people something that you consider to be funny, of course, as they watch it, then you start to get more feedback as to, yes, that was the right piece of content or that was the wrong piece of content.
And the system learns and continually improves as a result.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the whole point of these systems, is the more and more information you can feed them, the more they learn and the better they get.
Well, thank you very much, Charles. This has been a fascinating conversation. That's Charles Dawes there, Senior Director, International Marketing at TiVo.
Thank you very much, Graham. It's been a pleasure.
You can listen to other ASI Cast interviews by accessing the archive of recordings at asiconferences.com.